Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I was sitting in a salon chair and my hairdresser gasped because it turned out I was losing my hair. I was having bald spots, just absolutely terrifying.
This is Rahaf Harfouch. She's a really busy person. She writes books, runs a company, and even teaches management at a university in Paris.
Oh man, I was like the textbook hustle culture person. I was, you know, you've got to grind all the time. If you're not exhausted, you don't want it badly enough. If you ask me how I was doing, 9 times out of 10, I'd be like, ugh, I'm so busy. I'm so exhausted. Only got 3 hours of sleep. I've got 14 projects on the go. And I would brag about it as though this was something to be proud of.
But then her body said, enough is enough. And losing her hair was just the beginning.
And then one day I woke up and I was like, I just can't do anything. I just couldn't. I told my husband, I was like, I think I broke my brain. No more writing, no more ideas, no more movements. I just did not have the mental capacity to do anything. And I got so scared that I went to the doctor because I thought I had broken my brain in such a way that I wouldn't be able to work again. And my doctor said to me, you are burned out, but for real. Like, you're not just tired. Your body is nearing the end of its limits. And if you do not stop working and stop living the way that you are right now, there are going to be severe health consequences, which was absolutely terrifying.
Rahaf knew something had to change.
And that saved my life because I was on a track that honestly would have probably had me in a heart attack at 45, like for sure.
Unfortunately, this is a story many of us can relate to. So on today's episode, we're going to figure out why we experience burnout at work, what it does to our brains, and what we can do to tackle the problem. Plus, we're going to visit an unusual community out in the desert where the residents can teach us a thing or two about work-life balance.
For whom are you working? Is work your God?
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent, and it's time to start chasing life.
Hi, Sanjay. My name is Nina Mancuso. I'm 31 years old from Burbank, California. And let me tell you, this full-time high school teacher and married mama four definitely can relate to burnout. Just the endless to-do list, the endless things to clean up and plan and consider. But I really had to get humble, ask for help, and honestly, break down and have a good cry.
I worked in the veterinary field for about 14 years. I was just so drained, and at that point, I didn't care anymore. And when I finally realized I was doing this, I had to get out of the veterinary field because I was putting patients at risk.
I recently opted to take a short-term disability leave from my work for about 3 months. After experiencing pretty significant burnout, which led to anxiety, depression, sleep issues, brain fog, you name it, the whole gamut. And it was really, led me to a place where I was working so much that I lost sight of myself and, you know, who I was outside of my work.
Let's face it. The past few years have been tough for everyone. There was this survey done in 2021. It found that nearly 60% of American employees were negatively affected by work-related stress the prior month. As a father, a neurosurgeon, a medical reporter, an author, a podcaster, I've come to know this feeling really well. I typically enjoy my work a lot, But there is this feeling sometimes when the body just gives out. You're so exhausted, but you're also cynical. You're not enjoying things as much as possible. People call it burnout, but what is it really?
The World Health Organization defines burnout is that it's a reaction. It's a physical and emotional reaction to a prolonged or chronic stress. You are depleting your energetic resources at a rate faster than you can recharge. And you're not doing this once or twice. You're doing this over and over and over, hence the chronic aspect of it.
That's Rahaf Harfouch again. You know, she's not just a victim of burnout. She's actually an expert on it now. Because after her eye-opening experience, she spent 3 years researching the topic. The end result was her book, Hustle and Float, aimed towards helping others recover from burnout and then find balance in life.
The term hustle and float is a white water rafting term, and it comes from a friend of mine who's a river guide. And the perfect white water rafting trip is the perfect mix of hustle, where you're actually like pushing yourself and testing your limits and growing to navigate challenging rapids, but also floating, where you let the river do the work. And if you hustle too much, you put your life in danger, you get tired, nobody has a good time. And if you float too much, it's boring and you don't go where you want to go. And so it's embracing the balance of that and recognizing that the rest is a part of success. The rest is a part of working hard.
People say, I want to live a stress-free life. And I will tell them that is probably not a possible nor a worthy goal. But the idea of being able to harness the good and leave the bad behind as much as possible is something you could work on.
Stress in and of itself is not bad. What makes burnout so dangerous isn't the stress. It's the chronic, nonstop element of stress without the opportunity to recover. You could experience stress every single day, and if you gave yourself the adequate time to recover, you would be fine. The danger of burnout is in the chronic part. It's stress, 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 stress with no rest ever, no recovery ever, no replenishment ever. And that's what makes it so dangerous.
Right. I mean, I think that that's the key. And that's what was so interesting when I was reading your book, you know, because the body keeps score, right? You have to ultimately at some point take breaks. And the breaks are for your physical health, but also your mental health, right? I mean, you may not realize it, but if you don't take the breaks, then all the things that you're trying to do will suffer. What are the symptoms of burnout as defined by the World Health Organization?
The World Health Organization characterizes burnout through three main categories or dimensions. The first is exhaustion, which is like a loss of energy. You know, exhaustion is both emotional and physical exhaustion. So if you're feeling drained, unable to cope, you're feeling tired, you have no energy. You're less able to interpret social cues. You take more sick days. There's also a physical element to exhaustion, which I experienced firsthand. Headaches, stomach aches, intestinal issues, trouble sleeping. So that is the physicality, sort of the draining, the exhaustion part of it. The second element is cynicism, which is when you kind of start to hate your job. You start to see your job as being more stressful, more frustrating. You start to take emotional distance from your colleagues. You're quicker to snap. You're quicker to be in a bad mood. You feel numb about your work. You just like don't care as much as you did before. And the last part is feelings of reduced professional ability. So this is when you are like, I don't feel confident that I have the skills to be successful. You might have difficulty concentrating. You feel less capable. You're making more mistakes. You lack creativity. And the saddest part about that is you also lose the sense of like purpose or your idealism of what your work or the type of meaning that your work was supposed to bring. And generally, there is a play between all of these elements, but people who experience one or all are generally categorized as burned out.
Speaking of the World Health Organization, they did officially add burnout to the International Classification of Diseases. But it was interesting, when I was looking at that, they specified that burnout is an occupational phenomenon, not a medical condition. And I was curious, when you saw that, did you find that to be a helpful distinction? Is it important to distinguish it this way?
I think it's great that they just listed it and acknowledged that it was, I believe the word that they use was like a workplace hazard, which should kind of give you a signal to the seriousness of what it is. But we also need to expand a little our understanding, because as we've seen from the research that's coming out in the last 2 years, increased rates of depression, increased rates of anxiety. So I love the focus on workplace because I think we need to acknowledge the systems and the expectations we put on people that result in burnout on an organizational level. Like, it's all interconnected. And I think the myth that we can somehow be burned out at work and then be functioning human beings outside of work is a bit odd.
I think that is a critically important message. And I will raise my hand and say guilty, this idea that I felt like for a long time I could really, you know, drive myself to the point of burnout in my professional life and then sort of toggle a switch all of a sudden and be a different person in my personal life. I'd like to believe that's true. I think a lot of people would. How much of your own self-worth, how you value yourself, how you define success is a part of burnout?
So much. So much. And this is where it gets really complicated. We took the idea of the American dream, which is if you work hard enough, you'll be successful, which is something that all of us kind of believe, right? But the flip side is when we adopted that idea, we also adopted the what I call the shadow dream, which is the understanding or the belief that if I'm not successful, that you would say the reason I'm not doing better is because I'm not working hard enough. If you believe in your heart that the reason that you are not where you want to be in your career is because you're not waking up early enough or you're not staying at the office late enough, then no amount of advice or tips or solutions are going to work. Because if you think that your self-worth is linked to how hard you're working, a million people could tell you, take a break, take a rest, step away, and it won't matter because it goes against your belief system.
Wow. I mean, you know, my stomach was hurting a little bit as you're describing all that, maybe because I feel for you. But also, I think maybe there's a sense of familiarity in your story that I feel, and maybe a lot of people who are listening feel as well. Your identity is wrapped into this whole issue. Who are you? What do you hold dear?
When we describe ourselves, you know, you say Rahaf is an author. She is a digital anthropologist. She is a researcher. But when I was going through burnout, the thing that really freaked me out was I asked myself, you know, who am I? What am I if I'm a writer that can't write? What's left? What's left of me? And so I really had to make peace with the fact that I had to maybe be okay with Rahaf is, period. Rebuilding this idea that me as a human is just Rahaf, not by output, not by busyness, not by to-do list. Like me, just me as I am was enough, ended up giving me the key to completely rewrite my relationship with work and to free myself. And the curious thing is once you free yourself, you actually double your performance because you're no longer tied to this programming that just hurts you in the long run.
Here's another interesting thing. Burnout isn't just a state of mind. It does physically impact the brain in surprising ways.
Your brain loses the ability to utilize energy and to maintain a positive mood balance. It impacts your ability to file memories and your response to stress. And that happens because we see an enlargement of the amygdala, which is the part of the brain that helps us process fear and emotions. And an enlarged amygdala means increased moodiness, a stronger stress response when startled, and you even lose your ability to regulate your emotion.
We also see a thinning of the prefrontal cortex. That's a part of the brain that's responsible for decision-making and high executive function.
This means that your ability to assess situations and make decisions is reduced, and so is your attention and memory, making it harder for you to learn new things and making it more possible that you're going to make mistakes.
Burnout might even make you clumsier. Yeah, clumsier. There's new research suggesting that the basal ganglia, a part of the brain that coordinates movement, is smaller in people who experience burnout.
So in a nutshell, your brain becomes more sensitive to stressful situations, even outside of work. That means that something that on a normal day might be a 3 on your scale of stress becomes a 7.
But the good news in all this is that it's not necessarily permanent. With the right steps, it is possible to reverse these changes in the brain and even recover from burnout, which is exactly what Rahaf did.
There isn't an easy fix. The recovery is to go into yourself and unpackage all of these beliefs that you've been carrying around. So, you know, my parents, I'm Canadian, my parents immigrated from Syria. So I had that whole immigrant, got to survive mentality growing up, plus the, you know, the Canadian dream, very similar to the American dream. Like all of those things were such big parts of my identity. So the first part was unpackaging all of that. And the second part was being committed to get to know myself and my creativity and my energy, right? Your creativity is your biggest resource and your body is your best ally. And it has a cycle. And instead of trying to fit it into somebody else's idea of some stupid routine, you know, ask yourself, like, what do I want? What do I like? When do I feel energetic? When am I most excited in my day? I discovered my most productive time is in the, you know, afternoon to early evening. So I let go of all of this idea of being an early bird, even though everybody tells you you've got to get up at 4 a.m. And so I took the time to get to really get to know myself, get to know my creativity as a friend, my body as a friend, my brain as a friend. And I gave those parts of me what I needed for them to do their best. And what they needed in order to excel was rest and care and fresh air and walks, but also the confidence and the knowing that I am not defined by my to-do list. I let that programming go and was like, I am enough exactly as I am.
You know, a lot of times that's imposed on us, right? Companies impose that on us. They tell you your value. If you're feeling as an employee, if you're struggling with that sort of feeling, what do you do in that sort of situation? How can you regain your agency?
Well, there's stuff that you can do at work, but also looking at what you do outside of work. You know, are you investing enough time in building connection and building community and volunteering and spending time with other people and developing hobbies, not side hustles, not stuff you're under pressure to monetize, just a hobby, something you do just for you, for fun. Because oftentimes when we start to feel a lack of like personal ability, what we called earlier, a lack of confidence, that often means that you feel disconnected with yourself, right? So you need to rebuild that confidence. And how do you do that? You spend time with yourself, you focus on things that you're good at, you seek out good and fun experiences. But ultimately, it really comes down to you deciding where you're going to put your energy and time.
Here's the challenge for me sometimes, and maybe this is something you could help me with. I imagine other people have this as well. I want to float, but what I find sometimes is that I physically will do that, but I have a hard time mentally doing it at the same time. Like, I worry that I'm not being productive when I'm floating. I'm just being honest here with you. And maybe I need to shift how I think about what I value and what I emulate. I get that, but I have a hard time with it. How do I really get to that point where it's actually helping address my burnout?
So there's a part of you that has associated that rest is not valuable, or at least not as valuable as the sacrifice and the demonstration of hustle. Rest is not something that you have to earn. Rest is just a part of the joyfulness of being alive, and that your parents and the people that love you want you to be happy and they want you to be at ease. And ultimately the reframe starts to say that rest is me showing up for myself. Rest is me living and enjoying my life. Rest is allowing me to live in balance and in harmony.
The healing process that Rahaf describes is by no means an easy one. But it is about tapping into our innermost self, unlearning bad habits and beliefs we have about what it means to be successful. If we have time for the hustle, we also need to make time to float. Again, it's not as easy as it sounds, but we did find a unique group of people who seem to have it all figured out.
At the end of a work period, if you're not finished, you're not finished. You'll just continue the next day.
Coming up after the break, we're going to make a trip out to New Mexico, where a community of monks may have found the secret to true work-life balance. And now back to Chasing Life. In the desert of northern New Mexico, in a canyon 13 miles off the main highway, you might hear the echoing of church bells and Gregorian chants.
I dare say we're probably one of the, if not the most remote monasteries in the world.
That's Brother Chrysostom. He's a monk at the Monastery of Christ in the desert. He's also the guest master who welcomes visitors from the outside world.
Right now, I'm looking out of the window from the guest master office, and I'm just looking at snow-dusted canyon walls with plenty of alpine trees on it, with a very slow-moving Chama River below, and green pastures and horses that we have on our monastery here.
Okay, now I know you might be wondering, what are we doing here at a monastery? Well, the monks at this monastery live by the principles of Saint Benedict, who lived in Italy 1,500 years ago. Saint Benedict believed that monks should be a part of the outside world, and it was impractical to expect them to just pray and not contribute to the community. So his motto for his followers was always ora et labora, or prayer and work.
The rule of Saint Benedict extols the virtues of work and how work is a necessary sort of activity for the monk. We're not men who pray, but we're men of prayer. And what that means is that everything we do should be a form of prayer.
And that's not just reading the Bible. The monks actually roll up their sleeves and they get to work. They make soap, they sew clothes, they brew beer, they cook food.
You'll hear clanging of pots and pans and dishes in our kitchen. Brothers will also be working outside, working at the guest house, or working on construction projects on the property, such as the new greenhouse that we're raising, as well as some of the clearing of landscape of trees and bush that has grown up over the winter.
The monks have a daily routine built around the rule of Saint Benedict. They're up from 4 a.m. till 7:30 p.m., splitting their time between prayer, reading religious texts, and work.
There should be equal amounts of things within the day. So your day should not be all work, nor should your day be all liturgical prayer, although your whole day is prayer, but not in that form. And nor should your day be just sitting around reading scriptural text all day. There should be a balance of that.
The monks stick to an extremely strict schedule. They only work about 4 hours a day, no more, no less. Work starts when the church bells ring at 9 in the morning. At lunchtime, they ring again, signaling the end. There's no, hold on, let me just send out this last email. There is no, gosh, I'm still in the middle of this thing. When the bells ring, no matter what, you stop and you head to prayer.
At the end of a work period, if you're not finished, you're not finished. You'll just continue the next day. You know, you're not here just to work. You're here to find God through work, through prayer, through community. And this is just one aspect of it. So to get overwhelmed by work, you're kind of losing the point.
I gotta say, it is a bit difficult for me to wrap my head around all this. I think most of us are used to shaping the rest of our lives around our work schedules, not the other way around. This requires a little mental gymnastics for me. But Brother Chrysostom knows this well, because before he was a monk, he was actually a successful businessman for years. He worked in finance and consulting, and like many of us, he struggled with overwork and burnout.
I remember pretty much not seeing the sun as a young associate, pretty much having monastic hours from sun up to sundown, but even going longer. So it was like not from 4 to 7:30, it was actually 4 to midnight, pretty much every night.
Back then, Brother Chrysostom would visit the monastery to get away from his busy life.
It's a refreshing feeling. It's like getting into a taxi in Times Square and immediately ending up on a beach, which is isolated. It's like night and day. So I started doing this every year for a week. And that was sort of my way of recharging and understanding when I was getting burned out. And it's no surprise to me that I ended up in a monastery eventually.
Look, Building a totally new work-life balance in a place isolated from the world is very different from trying to make it work within our existing lives. I get that. There are things beyond our control. Unlike the monks, many of us do have to work full-time. We do have deadlines to meet, and we do have bosses making demands on us. But there are still things we can do on an individual level to help prevent, even recover from burnout. Tip number one, prioritize getting enough sleep.
When I first came, I was the type of person that could operate on very little sleep. But now I am understanding that I need to sleep, and that contributes to your overall health, your attitude, your disposition. You have to acknowledge that your body does need to sleep. So sleep is important, whether in the work world or a monastic.
Tip number two, have fun. Even monks do stuff for fun.
I mean, there's joy in being a monk. Yes, it is a penitential life, but it's not a penitentiary, okay? You know, so, and we have our interests and our, and what we do and during our recreation depends on what those, where those interests lead. I mean, I'm a musician and I miss playing on in ensembles, but I can still play on my own and enjoy that.
Tip number three, develop a routine and stick to it.
A routine is actually helpful because you can acclimate yourself mentally, physically, even spiritually to doing the same thing every day. It may not be all day, but something that you do every day at the same time, for the same duration, for the same purpose. And you'll be surprised what other types of routines may develop, and particularly routines that involve other people, family members, friends, community.
And there's more tips from Rahaf Harfouch. Tip number four, figure out what drains your energy.
Identify and pay attention to what drains you and what replenishes you. So you might find that one social network actually fills you with energy and another social network makes you feel like you are really tired and super stressed out. And so really understanding that everybody has different sources of draining and sources of replenishment. So then obviously do less of the draining ones and more of the replenishing ones.
Tip number five, take real notice of what makes you happy.
Pay attention to your body. Get to know yourself. When are you more creative? In the morning, in the afternoon? What do you like to do? Do you like to work out in the morning? Do you like to work out late at night? Like, really figure out what combination of the way you live your life gives you the happiest, most energetic, most peaceful, most joyful result. And know that you can always customize as you see fit.
Tip number six, take regular breaks, even when you're working.
Instead of waiting until we're at 5% to plug in, it's understanding that every little bit of time you can do some small things to recharge that battery throughout the day. And that could be just a 5-minute walk, a 30-second stretch. It could be getting up and getting a cup of tea. It could be making sure that you're well hydrated. But this idea that the goal isn't to work for as long and as hard as you can and then take a rest when you're exhausted. It's doing bursts of work that are aligned with your own energy cycle. And when you start to wane, knowing that it's normal and knowing that it, the best thing you can do for yourself is to stop, recover, replenish, and then go to the next thing.
And tip number seven is for companies and the bosses. Think about how you might be part of the problem. Are you creating a healthy work environment? Empower your employees to set boundaries at work. Maybe that means no emails on weekends or after business hours. I know, it's not easy, but it's important. Encourage folks to use their vacation time and give people the flexibility to do what works for them. That will likely result in them not only being happier, but also more productive. I've always been someone who's been really dedicated to the hustle. I have a lot of jobs. I work out every day. I make time for my three teenage daughters and my wife. I'm always trying to learn new things. But truth be told, there are times I just want to float. And I've never been really good about letting myself do that without guilt. So that's definitely something I'm going to work on. And maybe we can work on it together. Let me know if any of this is working for you. I'll be curious to hear if you tried out some of the tips discussed in this episode. If you did, record your thoughts as a voice memo, email them to AskSanjay@CNN.com or give us a call at 470-396-0832 and leave a message. We might even include them on an upcoming episode of the podcast. Next week, something special. I'm going to share more of my conversation with astronaut Christina Cook. Some of the most fascinating bits that didn't make it into our earlier episode. In fact, we're going to hear more about her personal story, as well as her 11-month journey into space.
Looking out on the universe when you're on the dark half of the Earth is just absolutely stunning.
We'll be back Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Chasing Life is a production of CNN Audio. Megan Marcus is executive producer. Zoe Saunders is the senior producer. Our podcast is produced by Jordan Gaspore, Emily Liu, Xavier Lopez, Isuke Samuel, and Grace Walker. Our production assistant is Allison Park. Our intern is Eduardo Ocampo. Our medical writer, Andrea Kane. Tommy Bazarian is our engineer. And a special thanks to Ben Tinker and Amanda Seeley of CNN Health, as well as Ashley Lusk, Rafina Ahmad, and Courtney Koop from CNN Audio.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.